This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
How many of us have art books sitting on a coffee table or in a bookcase, unread? Perhaps our mother-in-law bought them for our birthday. Or maybe they were a holiday purchase on a visit to a gallery after that holiday lunchtime wine. You're going to read them cover to cover when you retire. Of course you are. Once in a while, however, an art book comes along that you do want to read, that will not only steal the show, but will also inspire the show. Today we're talking about one such very special book and the exhibition of the same name. Kia ora and welcome to Sightlines, your guide to the visual arts in and around Dunedin. I'm Sally McMillan and this show is brought to you on behalf of the Dunedin Public Art Gallery Society. Today we're speaking with Lauren Gutzel and Lucy Hammonds of the Dunedin Public Art Gallery, the curators of the forthcoming exhibition, Te Aki Kauroa, and the authors of the very beautiful book of the same name, Artists and Stories of Dunedin Public Art Gallery. Lucy and Lauren, welcome back to Sightlines.
Thanks for having us.
Kia ora, thanks for having us.
So I've got your book in front of me, and it's most definitely a show stealer, and FYI, it also recently stole my entire weekend when I had to read it to prepare for this interview. It is a very engaging read. How long has it been in the writing, and tell us about why now was a good time to publish it.
Oh, thanks, Sally. We've been working on this book. In some respects, it feels like forever, and also we started yesterday, but we've been sort of researching and working on it in earnest for about 12 to 18 months. And that takes into account the time for design and production and print. So it's about 17 years, I think, since the last big collection book was created. And so it felt like, you know, in the last 2 years, we've been talking about it being a good time to revisit that book, sort of gather together the history of the institution with our current work and our current collecting. And so the book has given us an opportunity to look closely at the last decade or 15 years or so of contemporary collecting and of historic works that have come into the collection over that period of time, and how they've come to meet the very much loved artworks and stories that have been held in the collection since its foundation in the 1880s. So
I guess it builds then on the two previous books, Treasures, which I think was published in 1990, and mm-hmm. Beloved in 2009, which will be sitting in a lot of our listeners' bookshelves, read, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it does. And we looked really closely at both of those books and what the motivations and the timing that sat around each of them, who wrote them, how they were written, what was in them, and how this book could come to that trilogy, I suppose. You know, they all are books that have functions, they reflect their times, they reflect the interests of artists, they reflect the interests of staff and the direction of research, and so this one very much does that. It's a real celebration of the vision of our institution and the vision of our community, and I think that's something that comes through really strongly in the way we've talked about it and the way we're thinking about it now and how we feel about it now it's arrived. It's a really good time, I think, as a society, to find ways to celebrate vision and to sort of celebrate the role of arts and culture, the space that they create for us as people. And, you know, those sound like lofty goals, but they're important.
Well, they're lofty, but they're achieved. And I think, you know, the book really speaks to all of those things. It's pleasing in a myriad of ways, but one that leaps right out is the fact that it's ordered alphabetically, which is actually quite unusual, according to the names of the artists whose works are represented in the book. And I have a feeling that there was a purpose to that.
Yes, there absolutely was a purpose to that. And I think when you're making books, you're always thinking about how the reader is going to come to the information gathered across those pages. And thinking about the structure of our book, we knew that Treasures had been organised by accession number, so when the works were entering the collection. Beloved was structured on the production date of the artworks, so telling a very sort of historic to contemporary story of when the works were made. And I think the structure of this book, for us, it's about how the book, the opening section of the book, it's about the location of the long form essays at the heart of the book, and then, you know, the ordering of the artworks in the plate sections. And as you say, they've been organised alphabetically. And for us, I think the structure of the book, that is a signal in the fact that this book, we're not attempting to sort of tell a linear sort of history of the collection, but we have a focus on artists and the stories that their works carry over time. And so I think for us, the structure of the book was sort of just an immediate signal about the centering of artists and that the work of artists, they sit front and centre in what we do at the gallery and in the heart of this book.
And it makes it all about them. And I think, for me anyway, those juxtapositions that that creates on a really basic level just make the book really surprising and interesting to read. You get each page is in contrast to the one on each side of it, and it makes it visually provocative, but it also made me think about how art, regardless of who creates it, or when or in what medium, all has in common the fact that it tells a story. Is there an underlying emphasis on that in the book?
Yeah, I think absolutely. And I think it's interesting, as you say, Sally, the juxtapositions of works in the order that we've structured it in has, you know, makes the book incredibly dynamic, and it's brought works together that are so great on the page, and it's really blurring time frames of production and moments in history and moments in time. And so I think what the book does, what we hope the book does, is really celebrate and centre the sort of agency of art as it moves across time. And, you know, how the works reflect different histories and they challenge perspectives and they, you know, connect people across time and cultures and different experiences. So I think all of those great complex things about art are sort of highlighted in this book.
Yes, they really are. Looking through, it's almost 300 pages, so this is an absolute whopper of a book. And the 204 artworks included, which span from the 14th century to just last year, the sheer breadth of the collection really does become evident. And as well as old favourites like Ralph Hotere's Rosemary, Frances Hodgkin's Woman and Child, Van der Velden's O Terra Gorge, there are also some works that have been in the collection for some time but are having their debut in the book, which is really exciting. And at the risk of a spoiler, can you give us your favourite examples of these?
And I think one of the works that really is great for me to see in that book is a work by Shireen Tawil called 5364 Nocturne. And Shireen was our international visiting artist in 2024, and she spent 5 weeks on residency with us. And so Shireen's major moving image work that came out of that residency period was sort of born out of her research inquiry into Arabic celestial navigation technologies and that influence on the movement of people. The work is sort of born out of this performative Hajj pilgrimage that Shireen undertook from a starting point here in Otipoti and then ended on the west coast of Aotearoa. And so it's this kind of beautiful, speculative, performative work that takes you through the landscape across the Lower South Island. So it's great to see that we could sort of fit those sort of recent acquisitions into this book.
What about you, Lucy?
There are two other works that Lauren knows are my favourites in the book, and I sort of developed a little bit of an obsession with them, which are two different views of Tomahawk, sort of looking down over the sand dune and across the bottom of the lagoon and out onto the beach. It's a view sort of to the north, looking up towards Smales Beach, and they're by R.N. Field and Toss Woolaston. And the Toss Woolaston is from very, very early in his career. The R.N. Field is shortly after he emigrated to Aotearoa and moved to Otipoti, Dunedin, to work at the Dunedin School of Art. It was a radical time of change at the art school. It's hugely important to the art school as another contributor to this sort of bold vision for creativity in the city, in which they were really leading the country in ways to think about painting particularly. But there's a beautiful passage in Toss Woolaston's biography called Sage Tea, where he talks about arriving at R.N. Field's house and being invited into this sort of salon that he ran there. And it's sort of the pressure of needing to paint something. And this was the painting, I believe, that came from that moment, which is in our collection. But what's really lovely about the two works is that they clearly depict the same view. It's the view off the back step of R.N. Field's home on Tomahawk Road, which is on my walk from my house to my bus stop. So I often walk past the house and I'm always sort of peering down the side driveway to try and figure out, you know, whether the back deck is the same and whether the view has changed. And it just feels a sort of very rich moment of connection, I suppose, yes, between what still remains here and what stories the collection can kind of yield.
Right from page one, the reader is informed that this is a serious publication which is determined to give us more than just pictures. The foreword to the book is written by DPAG's director, Cam McCracken, and in it he talks about the gallery's move away from an authoritative approach where the gallery basically tells people this is the art in which you should be interested in, which forms part of our history, and towards collaborative and reflexive ways of working, of inviting other participants to help shape the gallery's direction. And he refers to the four PO, or strategic pillars, which have informed the gallery's 140-year history. Can you tell us about those and how you have represented these in the book?
Yeah, absolutely. So I suppose with the four PO, or the strategic pillars, they're the values that sort of we now talk about as sort of upholding the collection and the work we do at the Dunedin Public Art Gallery. And they sort of started taking form out of work we were doing back in 2019 when we started working with Pai Manu Ngāi Tahu Visual Arts Collective. Then over the last, 8 years or so, they sort of got more sort of formalised in how we talk about them now. And so they're quite direct and immediate, and hopefully just from saying, so the four values themselves are people, place and identity, global networks and the power of art. And so within the book, there is an essay that sits in the centre of the book that speaks to each of those PO values. And it's interesting. So the people value, it's sort of around the, you know, many voices and stories that sit in the collection of artists, of subject matters, of their work, of donors and benefactors, of all the different people, of staff in the institution over the years, you know, all of the different people that have come and been involved in the collection or the works in some capacity. So, and then place and identity, it's really about understanding the unique position of the collection in the city, in Aotearoa, and how that's been reflected through art over time, and how artists have come to respond to that and to this place. Global networks, you know, it's the collection was, you know, founded with an aim to bring international art history, a Western art history, to this place. And so the Global Networks PO, it's sort of thinking about the flow and exchange of information and ideas nationally and internationally, and, you know, the exchange of ideas, experiences, and the flow of artists and the flow of artworks. And then the power of art is quite an obvious one, but, you know, the galleries operates on a really strong belief in the power of art. You know, it's on the lanyards we wear. But the transformative potential of the moments when audiences come to artworks. And so it's really been interesting working on this project. And the more, you know, this is the first time that these PO values have sort of been taken such a sort of concrete form. And we've been really able to talk about these within the history of the collection, within the context of Ōtiputi, up again, bring in artworks into that conversation. But the PO are really important in relation to the work we do now in the present moment. But actually they reflect the ambitions and the relevance to the founding of the collection back in 1884.
Yes. And it gives it that lovely sort of timeline feel.
Mm.
Yeah. For me, your essays speak impressively to the depth of your knowledge as curators, but they're also what makes, I think, this book a book for all comers. It sits handsomely as a beautiful art publication for those who just want to look at the pictures, but it also has serious credit as an academic publication that addresses the, as you say, the history and importance of DPAG's collection over 140 years. And I think, too, the fact that all of the writing in the book is in both English and Te Reo also speaks loudly to the theme of collaboration and inclusivity.
And I think when you're doing projects like this, you know, you're always aware of the expertise within the institution. You know, Lucy and I have both worked with this collection now for over a decade each. And so we have our own art historical knowledge and, you know, experience to bring to these works. But we also understand the sort of limitations of the institution. And so people that come to this book will see that we have prioritised Māori and Pacifica voices as external writers that have come in to meet some of these artworks. And then other sort of research experts and scholars within their fields. And so it was sort of interesting. We were really lucky and fortunate, actually, that Dr. Anya Samarasinghe happened to be our curatorial intern in 2025 while we were working on this publication. And, you know, she's an art historian with a huge breadth of knowledge around Victorian art and its meeting point within collections in Aotearoa, New Zealand. So she's someone who's written a number of texts in this book, and we're really grateful for all of her contribution. And equally, you know, it raises, you know, we went on a process. There's some, the collection holds a strong group of Japanese prints. And so we went on a sort of, you know, figuring out who could come and meet those images in the book. And it was interesting because New Zealand, there isn't an immediate Asian art curator. So we ended up actually looking to Australia for that. And so we worked with Dr. Olivia Meehan, who is an art historian, but she was able to bring her sort of expertise around Japanese art histories and material culture to those works. So people will come to the book and see perhaps new voices, new writers that they might not have seen their work before, which is really exciting and great. Yeah,
I think the care and effort that you have taken is readily evident in the written material in the book. We talked at the beginning about how the book is not only a showstopper, but has also informed the show, namely the exhibition of the same name, which has just opened at DPAG for listeners. Get down there. What we want, of course, is for people to see that for themselves, but can give us a taste of what they will see.
Yeah, sure. It's always a really interesting process to find a relationship between a book and an exhibition. So the exhibition Te Ahi Kāroa is drawn out of the content of the book, but it is sort of a different experience, I suppose. People who come to the gallery will see that the exhibition opens with the same opening works as the book opens with, as a sort of representation of place from a Māori perspective and from the collection's perspective. But very quickly, the exhibition shapes itself into a journey. So the title of the book and exhibition, Te Ahi Kāroa, does sort of gesture towards a journey and a movement through time. So it's a metaphor, I suppose, for the idea of settlement and occupation of land over very long periods of time. And, you know, we talk together with that group around the sort of vision of Te Waipounamu as a place that has these fires of occupation that mark a journey across the landscape. And so the exhibition is very much shaped around that idea of journey. The first part of the exhibition takes people on a sort of a fast-forwarded journey that delivers them into the landscapes and artworks of Ōtiputi Dunedin. It then moves them into a part of the exhibition that looks at the sort of notion of arrival and departure as depicted by artists. It reflects how the artists from this country and from this community were very actively networked around the world right from the foundation of the institution up until this point. There's a kind of constant flow of people and experiences, and the works in that part of the exhibition tell us about that. Then it moves into this sort of much more internal space where we think about putting down roots and establishing relationships to place and what we build around us when we do that, what we bring, what we shed, and what's gained from those moments of stopping. So that's the part of the exhibition that I suppose looks at homes, it looks at buildings, it looks at sort of foundations. And then out of that, you know, the other metaphor in the title, Te Ahi Kāroa, was taught to us about the sort of metaphor of the energy of a fire as something that has great potential born out of the collective nature of that thing, you know, of many, many particles coming together and sort of combusting into this very exciting, warming, sort of vigorous entity. And so at that point in the exhibition, I suppose we've had this sort of internal pause. The exhibition sort of turns into looking at the sort of outpouring of energy and potential that comes of artists making art, of artists coming together, and sort of where that can deliver our imaginations, where that can kind of power us up to think about what might be beyond what we can see, you know, where the inspirational kind of energetic, energizing, contemplative power of art really is. So, you know, as Lauren said, all of those things speak to those Poe values that frame the way we work. They make us think about where we are. They make us think about who we are, how we've got there, and where we might be going.
Yes. But for now, the show is showing for 2 years, as befits an exhibition of this scale and importance, and I suspect that it may be one that people visit more than once. Lauren Gutzel and Lucy Hammonds, congratulations on your beautiful book, The Opening of the Exhibition, and for taking what I know is your valuable time to be here today with us on Sightlines. And now here's Ross Curry and Linda Cook with the latest on the Dunedin art scene. This is Snapshot.
Ross, I hear there's a major new exhibition coming up at the Dunedin Public Art Gallery this month.
That's right, Linda. And the Dunedin Public Art Gallery has a new show with works from the permanent collection opening on the ground floor from March the 28th, going right through April and beyond. The name of this is Te Ahi Karoa, Artists and Stories of the Dunedin Public Art Gallery. And at the same time, they'll be launching a book with the same title. Remember, members can get a 20% discount at the shop, and this is a book that all Dunedin art lovers will want for their collection. Now, FE29 has another unique exhibition through to April the 13th. The late Chris Adams, the printmaker, has his mezzotint prints on show based on the Otago Harbour. These are small atmospheric depictions of different spots on the Otago Peninsula. Adams' work has been shown at FE29 previously. As a geochronologist, he travelled to many remote places where he took photos and sketches. He learned the painstaking process of mezzotint printing from John Drawbridge, and from there he was hooked, and many of his photos and sketches were turned into mezzotints. But Linda, this show has a unique work from a self-taught Port Chalmers-based sculptural artist, Van der Vies. A jack-of-all-trades, it looks. Tell us about this.
Well, I didn't know anything about Henk Van der Vies' work until the FE29 exhibition. His small mechanical sculptures are intricately constructed. He replicates birds using native timbers, copper and brass. They're quite beautiful. The birds are anatomically correct, and as you turn the small handles on the side of the object, the birds move in a clockwork-type fashion and replicate flight patterns.
Really interesting work, this. And the Hodgkins Fellow for 2025, Rhys King, has a show at the Hockins through March. I know, Linda, you're a fan of his work. What can people expect from this exhibition?
Well, Rhys has produced a mountain of paintings over this last year. He's quite a prolific painter. If you visit the Hocken, and I highly recommend you do, you will find wall-to-wall loose canvases which are emblazoned with colour and painterly mark-making. These are punctuated by small framed pieces. At first, they appear as large abstractions, but if you look carefully, you will find the occasional face or eye looking back at you.
It's so disappointing that this fellowship is on hold for 2026 and that the organisers did not see this coming and attempt to find a solution. When you look back on previous recipients, it's a list of who's who in the New Zealand art world. However, the latest news is the funding has been found for the fellowship to continue next year, 2027. But its sustainability is in question. Perhaps some forward planning now is needed.
What else is happening around town then, Ross?
Gallery De Novo has a selection of coastal scenes by Australian painter Marco Hubria Piper. If you like swimming in the sea, these are for you. And Olga has a selection of Marilyn Webb's works on sale, sourced from a private collection. In Oamaru, the big news is the opening of the newly extended Forrester Gallery, and we'll be talking more about the exhibitions there next month.
Thanks, Ross, and thanks to you, our listeners. If you'd like to hear today's show again or listen to previous shows, you can find us on the Otago Access Radio and DPAG Society websites or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to join the Society, you can also find a form on our website or join at the Dunedin Public Art Gallery reception. Thanks to contributors Ross Curry, Linda Cook, and producer and DPAG Society President Jonathan Quayle. Join us again next month for another dive into the visual arts in Dunedin and beyond. I'm Sally McMillan, and you've been listening to Sightlines.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.